This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. This is a podcast from the March 12th edition of The Current.
So we can see right away that there is a very significant quantity of plastic inside of this poor bird. He should have weighed somewhere around 1,000 grams, and he only weighs right now about 500, so he's about half of his body mass. There's no doubt this bird died as a result of this plastic ingestion.
Well, that's the sound from a video of an autopsy of a South Pacific seabird. And as you heard Canadian scientist Dr. Jennifer Laver say, even though this bird was found on a remote island, plastic ingestion was the likely cause of death. Of course, the oceans are clogged with plastic today. The so-called Great Pacific Garbage Patch of swirling plastic refuse is now said to be twice the size of Texas. And though you and I, as Canadian consumers, may do our dutiful best to put our recyclables in the blue bin, the sad truth is that just about 10% of plastic waste is ever recycled. Well, earlier this year at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, a new initiative was launched to help tackle our plastic problem. It is called Loop, and it's billed as a new way for consumers to shop. A big name roster of companies, including Procter & Gamble and Nestle, have signed on for the initial trial set to launch this spring in New York and Paris. There are plans to expand to other major cities around the world, including Toronto. Tom Zaki is the CEO of TerraCycle Incorporated, the New Jersey company behind the Loop project, and we reached him in Trenton, New Jersey. Good morning.
Thanks for having me today.
So, when did you first become concerned with how much plastic waste we as consumers are creating?
Well, it really hit me. You know, growing up in Canada, we used to do a lot of canoe tripping up in Algonquin Park and other places, and it was, you know, pristine and amazing. And when I came down to New Jersey for college, we went on a canoe trip, and there was garbage floating in the river, and there was just waste everywhere. And it really shocked me and brought this topic front and center.
And so connect the dots. Like, what was the specific inspiration for Loop? Was that it?
Well, so TerraCycle, the company that created Loop, I started 15 years ago, and it's been on a mission to eliminate the idea of waste by basically recycling things that are not recyclable and then integrating unique waste streams all the way to ocean plastic back into consumer products. And that's been growing for 15 years. And we realized about 3 years ago, as we were thinking about, is really recycling the solution to waste and making things from recycled materials the solution, we realize that recycling is incredibly valuable and incredibly important, but it's not the foundational solution to waste because it's only addressing waste at the symptom level. And so that began a journey about 3 years ago on, well, what is really the root cause of waste? And where we landed was using things once, or disposability. That is really what drives waste the way it is today. And it's easy, you know, to vilify disposability, but it's also important to look at its virtues. You know, the reason we as consumers vote for disposability multiple times a day is because it's incredibly convenient and really affordable. And so the thesis for Loop began by saying, how do we solve for disposability while maintaining the virtues of convenience and affordability? And that's how it started. And we've realized that the foundational unlocking principle was shifting ownership. Because so strangely, you know, when we go into a coffee shop and buy a cup of coffee, we're buying the coffee, but we also are purchasing that disposable cup. You know, just like if we buy a bag of chips, you know, we're buying the chips, but also the bag. Yet we don't really want to own these things. And so why should we? And by shifting ownership from the consumer to the manufacturer, suddenly everything starts making more sense, because then the manufacturer is motivated to make things long-lasting and durable and not creating things that go into the single-use environment.
You know, it's interesting to talk about recycling and it getting a bit of a black mark on it, because of the three R's, the reduce, reuse, recycling, really our Western societies have focused in the last number of years on the recycling. And I think what I'm hearing from you is like saying, let's focus on reuse, yeah?
Absolutely. And I do want to say the very most important thing is the first thing you said is reduce. I mean, we really as individuals need to think about buying less stuff, but that's a very hard thing to wrap a commercial system around. So at least within the idea of buying, yes, absolutely. Reuse is the critical way to solve for waste.
Okay, so tell me how Loop works into that then. How does it work exactly?
So Loop is an engine for consumer product companies, big and small, as well as retailers. So we're first work with producers, companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, P&G, many others, as well as smaller ones like great, even Canadian companies like Greenhouse Juice and so on, to help them create durable versions of their products. So imagine now that your ice cream isn't coming in coated paper like it comes today, but it comes in double wall stainless steel. And this is sort of the interesting thing about durability, is it's not just about reuse, but it's also about an elevation of design using materials that otherwise you wouldn't have access to that are way better.
What does that mean?
So for example, if you take the ice cream container, instead of it being in coated paper, which, you know, has only a certain amount of sort of beauty to it, now getting it in double-walled stainless steel is just way more aesthetic, way more beautifully designed, and even keeps your ice cream frozen on the go. Or as another example, your dish, or sorry, let's say your mouthwash, instead of coming in a plastic bottle, now comes in a beautiful glass container. And so you get this elevation of design and beauty while also being reusable.
Okay, and what do I do with these containers? Do I just rinse them out and use them at home for something else?
Well, so this is the key, is that disposability brings this unbelievable convenience, and Loop is here to match or beat that convenience. So Loop is partnered with major retailers, you know, Carrefour in France or Tesco in the UK, and we will be announcing our Canadian retail partner very soon, where you could buy these Loop products through their e-commerce platforms and or their in-store platforms, just like you normally would any product. And then when you're done, you don't have to wash, you don't have to do anything other than throw it into a bin, sort of like throwing it out. Except that bin now is your reuse bin. And at Loop, we'll pick it up, or you could drop it off at the store, whatever's more convenient. And then we take it, clean it, and then supply it back to the manufacturers who refill it.
Okay, so you're going to use like UPS trucks to deliver my ice cream sandwich in this double steel container thing that's going to look beautiful in. So you're going to use a big truck to deliver the product. So how does that square with the environmental footprint that you're trying to reduce?
Well, this is why we are working with major retailers. So, for example, if you buy in-store, you would, you know, drive to the store, pick it up as a normal product, and then on your next shopping trip, simply drop it off. So it's not any more cars on the road in that version. And then in the e-commerce versions, Loop is partnering with the retailers to use their existing supply chain. So, for example, in Europe, when the package is delivered to you in the trucks of those retailers, those same trucks pick up the dirty ones and take them back, which effectively doesn't put any new vehicles on the road. And those trucks also are reducing the need of garbage vehicles. So it's really focusing and partnering with existing infrastructure and focusing on not putting new infrastructure out there or new trucks on the road. From an environmental point of view, when you look at the life cycle analysis of this, it ends up being somewhere around 75% better for the environment than disposable packaging.
I'm going to ask you more questions, but I know that listeners are wondering, like, this sounds great. How much is this going to cost compared? Like, let's use the mouthwash in the plastic bottle. Say it's $3 at the store. I have no idea how much it costs. What's mouthwash in a fancy glass bottle going to cost me through Loop?
Well, this is the beauty. It'll cost you exactly the same. The only difference is you would put a deposit on the fancier, beautiful Loop package, which you get back in full once you return it to us, no matter what condition you return the package in. So if you've scratched it or dented it or even potentially, you know, broken it somehow, you still get back 100% of your deposit. And the reason the price can be the same is because the consumer doesn't own the package. It's always property of the manufacturing company.
A number of companies that you have convinced to use Loop are the ones that are the biggest wasters of plastic in terms of selling it to us consumers. How convinced are you that these companies are getting involved for any other reason than to clean up their own image? In other words, marketing and branding.
Well, look, they definitely care about their image, and that is definitely in play here. But they also agree that they cannot be in the business of disposability in the long run because it's simply can't keep going like this for 50 to 100 years. And they've all agreed to that. So they need to think about alternative ways to supply consumers their products. Because the challenge with disposability is it's a race to the bottom. Every single day, our packaging becomes cheaper and lighter. And that makes it way harder to innovate. You know, if you think about something like beverages, they began in, you know, beautiful refillable glass bottles, then to aluminum cans, then to plastic bottles, then to cartons, and then now they're trending towards pouches. And throughout that process, the ability to differentiate and innovate effectively goes away. And so as a way to be more competitive, these companies want to be able to bring innovations they could never do before. And the only way to be able to deliver your ice cream in a beautiful stainless steel container that even acts like a thermos is a model like this, even if you divorce the concern of sustainability.
This model isn't super modern in the sense that we used to get our milk delivered this way, right? In glass bottles, you'd get them in your milk chute or on your doorstep, and you'd leave the empties outside and someone would come pick them up.
Oh, it's exactly right. I mean, in Canada and Ontario, you have the beer store model where you can return your beer containers. This is Loop is nothing new in the idea of reuse. What is really new about it is that instead of just for milk or just for beer, it's for everything, especially products that never even experienced the idea of reuse, like toothpaste or laundry detergent or orange juice.
I'm glad you brought up the beer return example. It's not just here in Ontario. Other provinces also, you get money back when you return your empties. But so many people don't do that. They just chuck it in the blue recycling bin, right? And off it goes on recycling pickup day. So ultimately, this is going to depend on consumers taking a little more responsibility, time, effort for the containers they use. And I'm wondering what makes you think that people are willing to give up convenience in such a big way, because you're talking about a whole bunch of products that we use in our home.
And you really, it's a really important point that you say here, is that convenience is incredibly important. And there's two ways to solve for this concern, because you're absolutely right. Many people will recycle their beer containers. And I think a part of that is because the refund you get is not so high. In Loop, you know, every package has a deposit. And the deposits can range from as low as 25 cents up to $10. And as they become a little bit more meaningful, you have financial motivation to want to behave properly and do reuse instead of chucking them. In addition, it's also when everything in your life moves this way, it's really not that more inconvenient. I think the challenge in convenience is when you have multiple models functioning and only your beer bottles are you really worried about. Imagine now everything in your refrigerator, everything in your pantry would go into the same behavior. It makes it much easier and way more convenient. It's also not political. It's not something like climate change that has some level of debate on it, which is sort of crazy, but it does. You know, waste is very black and white. I've you know, always seen people say that, you know, landfilling and incinerating is not as good as reusing or recycling. It's very basic. People can get around it. And I think that really helps this topic get more attention quickly.
Tom Zaki, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Zaki is the CEO of TerraCycle Incorporated, the company behind the Loop program. By the way, the Loop trial will be coming to Toronto this spring. Well, clearly some people are pinning some big hopes on the Loop program. For a reality check on the prospects for plastic reduction, we're now joined by Tony Walker. Tony Walker is an assistant professor at the School for Resource and Environmental Studies at Dalhousie University. He's in our Halifax studio. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
You know, it wasn't so long ago that, as I said with Tom, that we were getting our milk delivered in glass bottles. I remember as a kid that happening, right? So what does it say to you about thinking around sustainability that the bright new idea for plastic reduction so resembles the old method of milk bottle delivery?
Yeah, I'm kind of cut from the same cloth too. We had a milkman in the UK, but also we had a pop man. He used to come around and deliver soda pop on a Saturday. You return the glass bottles and then you get a refill the following week. That's great. And that's a model that really does apply to a single line of product or consumer item. And I think the idea with Loop is that there's a fairly comprehensive set of products. But I'm looking at some of the brand names and there's some massive ones. We've got some of these in our store cupboard at home. But I'm just concerned that whilst these might be some luxury items and some kind of utilitarian items, I wonder if Canadian consumers can get all of their weekly grocery shopping from this platform. And maybe the trial is just, you know, the first step, and maybe more perishable items will be online fairly soon. That's what I'd like to see. You know, can we get milk and bananas using this system? And then we are really replacing and revolutionizing the way that we do our grocery shopping for the basics.
You know, earlier I mentioned that our recycling rates for plastic is just sitting at about 10% overall. Why are we so bad at it?
Yeah, that's the average. Anywhere between 9 and 13 has been quoted for different jurisdictions across Canada. But yeah, 10 is pretty pathetic. However, as residents, we think we do a great job because we wash containers out, assuming we're doing a good job at that, put them in the blue bag or bin or whatever happens to be in your jurisdiction, and we put them on the curbside. So you could be led to believe that you've got 100% recycling rate, because once it's picked up, you think all of it's going to get recycled, but that's not the case. Some of it's dirty and has to be diverted to landfill, so that's called contamination. Other things where you've got multiple plastic packaging co-mingled, it means that, say, a number four item can't be recycled with a number two item if they're combined. And so a lot of that is also discarded into landfill. So this is why we sit at the 10% value currently for recycling. But the aim of the federal government now is to move towards a zero plastic waste strategy. And so that will to do that, we'll need to increase our recycling rates. Of course, this is also removing lots of plastic food packaging anyway with the loop. So this is one way that we can probably increase our recycling rates, because we're moving a lot of the waste stream that has to go to landfill with our current system. But I think we're going to get better with recycling as well.
Right. And I just want to point out for people who don't understand what you're talking about, four and two, it's a little number on the bottom of your plastic packaging with the recycling symbol, or reduce, recycle, reuse symbol, and it has a number in it. And they're different kinds of plastics, and they can't be often recycled at the same time, yeah?
That's correct. And in fact, a lot of consumers, they see that triangle with a number on a whole range of their packaging items in their food cupboard. And, you know, intuitively, they think, well, that's great. It's got a number seven or a number five on it. Well, I can put it in the bin. It will get recycled because it has a number. But that's not always the case. Depending on your jurisdiction, not all jurisdictions can recycle the same plastic polymers. And, you know, for example, here in Halifax, bottle caps are not recycled, and consumers are requested to remove the bottle cap before they recycle the actual plastic bottle. Yet elsewhere across Canada and North America, bottle caps can be recycled. So again, it's just a change in technology in the way that the waste recycling stream can adapt accordingly.
You mentioned the government's commitment on plastics and reducing our use of them. I'm wondering whether it's this government or another one in whatever jurisdiction in Canada. Is there a role for taxation or fees to nudge people away from single-use plastics?
In terms of taxation, there's been many examples around the world where very small taxes on things like plastic bags have been implemented, and there's been some dramatic reductions in use and waste of plastic bags, for example, in the UK. But over time, there's something called a rebound effect, where people think, well, it's only 5 pence or 5 cents or whatever it happens to be, and then they start using plastic bags again. So oftentimes, governments have to ratchet up or slightly increase the cost just to, like Tom said, make sure there's an incentive to either not use it or make sure it's recycled. In the case of these larger packaging items, like what's been discussed for Loop.
You know, another a player in all this is not the people, the companies that make the content of the vessel, the soda pop or the mouthwash. It's actually the companies that make the container itself, the plastic industry. So how much impetus is coming from the companies that produce the containers we toss? Or are they just like, obviously, we want to keep making plastic containers. That's how we make money.
That's their business model. Absolutely correct. So, yeah, I'm sure members of or representatives of the plastics industry would like to keep the status quo, although many are on board with recycling programs. But I guess this is where the government could intervene and perhaps incentivize using more recycled plastic for making new stuff rather than extracting virgin plastic from the petroleum industry and try to disincentivize that. And that could be something like a taxation to the industry rather than consumers for the end of life of a product.
So even if the Loops of the world work as advertised, how much of an impact will a program like Loop actually have on reducing plastic waste?
Well, I think it's going to move in the right direction. This is an early adopter of a new innovative system. I know it's the milkman concept, but still, they're using a range of products, so it's new and innovative in the current climate. So I think as this becomes a behavioural norm and becomes part of mainstream, and of course, you know, box stores are going to have to probably change their model as well or stock these items on their own shelves, I think we'll see this becoming more mainstream extreme. And perhaps they might even have to increase the deposits on some of these packages to make sure they get back to the manufacturer. And that's where a little bit of incentivization or nudging or taxation, whatever you want to call it, a small cost, may help change human behavior. And I think that's the key here, or certainly one of the keys, is just changing how we interact with some of our consumer products.
Tony Walker, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Tony Walker is an assistant professor at the School for Resource and Environmental Studies at Dalhousie University, and he joined us from Halifax.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.